This podcast is sponsored by Judging Demystified, found at judgingdemystified.com. Sometimes the best moments and greatest effects written for dancers or color guard are not difficult, but knowing how to write and teach these moments requires experience and creativity. On this podcast, we talk with two master dance teachers and designers on ways to create moments that work, shows that are effective, and dances that are sometimes showy but easy. Our guests also discuss their process of teaching and how that applies to this same idea.
That's nothing really difficult by any means, but it's self-staging and it looks impressive. Like there's more going on than there actually is.
After I've taught a few 8 counts, then I immediately go and start working on the style of it or the emotion of it, the finer details, because I want that to be part of the choreography. I want them to learn that as we go.
Of course, effect also comes from cleanliness, and our guests discuss their concepts of teaching that anyone listening needs to be reminded of.
I used to have people ask me all the time, how do you get your girls? They must all take ballet. They must all do this and that and the other because they can hold themselves so well. How do you get them to do that? And it's because I never allowed them not to do that.
Lauren Metz and Caroline Bryan share great advice on the Marching Roundtable. The Judges Academy is an online course to train judges in the marching activity. But it's not only judges that need to understand the adjudication process. That's why we created Judging Demystified at judgingdemystified.com. Directors and instructors will plan and teach differently if they understand exactly how their shows will be evaluated, setting their students up for greater success. There's no question that a designer who knows the judging system they are writing for will have an advantage in creating shows that can win. Administrators certainly need to understand the process, and band parents and fans can appreciate the shows they're watching more and not be as frustrated or confused about the outcomes of contests they attend. We've created Judging Demystified to explain the judging process to all of these important members of our marching community. It's a streamlined version of the regular Judges Academy coursework, which highlights the parts that you need to learn for greater success and enjoyment. Judging Demystified is an online course where you work at your own pace, can start at any time, and it only takes about 5 hours to complete. Find out more and register for the course at judgingdemystified.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the Marching Roundtable podcast. This is Tim Hinton. On the line, one of my favorite human beings on the whole planet, Lauren Metz. How are you, Lauren?
I'm doing great.
Thank you so much for being here. And sitting next to you, Caroline Bryan. Caroline, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Great. So, Lauren, you and I have known each other a really long time. We used to design shows and teach shows together at Irmo High School back in the 90s, I guess?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Most of what we did was back in the 90s. That's right.
90s into the 2000s a little bit. And you are a wonderful dance instructor and color guard person. And you have the dance department, which is this fantastic dance studio. You've been on some podcasts before, but just in case anybody doesn't remember you, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have been in existence now for about 20 years. I've got about 1,000 students, about 20 employees, and
amazing.
Yeah. So we don't do anything guard-wise at the studio, but a lot of our girls are involved in the marching activity.
Right. And you, of course, were the, I guess, sort of auxiliary color guard dancer instructor for so many years at Irmo. And you have this wonderful knowledge of, you know, how things work on the field, putting dancers on the field, putting, you know, anybody out in the field that's an auxiliary and using them well. Now, Caroline, I'm assuming you are a dance person. Fill us in on who you are.
I am. I teach. I'm a staff member at the dance department. I teach with Lauren. For Lauren, I should say. And I actually was a high stepper, which was the dance team that you were talking about at Irmo High School.
Right.
Back in the 90s. So.
Well, I thought that was you, and it's wonderful to talk to you again. And so you also, of course, have this context and knowledge about how the world of marching band works and how dancing works on the field and all that stuff.
Correct.
Yeah. And Caroline also, after she graduated from Irmo, she went on to a professional dance career. And some of the things that she learned being a dance captain and whatnot, and those jobs that she had after she graduated really, I think, serve her well for what we're planning to talk about today.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Very, very interesting. So here's the way this works. Every September, I usually travel to South Carolina. And whenever I'm there, I make sure and meet up with Lauren. And Lauren, you know, I get together and have lunch and talk over old times and laugh and catch up. And I just love getting to see you in person. And so we always sort of have these stream of consciousness conversations. We talk about all kinds of things. And now, because I've been doing the podcast so long, a lot of times we'll be talking and I'll be talking to anybody and I'll go, oh, that would be a great idea for a podcast. It happens to me all the time. So last time I saw you, you were talking, I don't know how we got around to this, but we were talking about the showy but easy concept. And I said, that's a great idea for a podcast. Do you remember even how that came up?
I really don't. In fact, when I was telling Caroline about doing this podcast with you, that's exactly what I said to her. I said, I'm not even sure how we got on the subject, but I do recall that we were really, really, really getting into the conversation about young choreographers, young designers, especially always trying to be a bit self-indulgent and maybe show off all that they can do instead of really making sure that what they're giving their color guard to do shows off what they can do, what the kids can do, not necessarily what the choreographer can do, and finding ways to make moments that are showy and effective and keep the audience entertained and involved with the show, but maybe not so intricate that the kids kind of can't even master it.
Yeah.
So that's what I recall that we were probably doing our usual. I can't believe they do this.
Oh, come on. We never did that. No, but that's absolutely right. Because what happens is the longer you're around and the more experience you get, the more you learn these tricks of things that are spectacular to the audience, but really not that hard to accomplish. And the more of those you can have in your sort of toolkit, the better off, I think, for everybody. Because, as you said, we don't want to ask the students to do more than they're capable of or even more than they have to get the effect we want, right?
Exactly.
And I know you guys are both good at that. So, Caroline, you have some things in your toolkit that you use with your dance students that are impressive and exciting, but really not all that crazy hard to do, right?
I do. A lot of what I use, my biggest tool in my toolbox is formations, and movement within those formations. I basically kind of think of those formations as part of the choreography, as far as the kids don't necessarily have to be doing these grand leaps while they're moving, but the way that it looks, as a whole, not individually, adds so much. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah. So the way that you have them positioned in a group.
The staging. Right.
So give us an example.
Well, let's see. I know a lot of times people want to show off tricks. And that's still doable with kids that are maybe not quite as skilled. You still have maybe two or three or four that can do some leaps or some turns. But I would maybe twice in a 2.5 minute dance feature them, maybe two times out of the whole dance. Other than that, it is all about having, let's say you have four rows and you have them do, say, 4 8-counts. And then after that, it's become stagnant. And especially if they're not doing anything too difficult, you've got to get them to start moving. Even as simple as taking stage right and stage left, and have them switch spots for an 8-count with some arms, you know, and nothing crazy, just some arms going up and going down. Coming from 2 lines and expanding that out into 4 or 6 lines in an 8-count. And again, that's nothing really difficult by any means, but it's all staging and it looks impressive. There's more going on than there actually is.
And how I would relate that to color guard is, you know, there are definitely moments in the drill when the drill itself is the moment. Right. So you don't want to distract from that by adding in a whole lot of intricate flag work that then it just ends up looking like a big jumbled mess. It's it's kind of like with, for me, you know, when you look at your life, you remember specific moments. There were a whole lot of transitions and things that went on, you know, but you, what you remember are the moments. And I kind of feel like a show is like that. And that kind of goes along with what Caroline's saying. You know, use the drill when there's a big drill impact. You want something super simple because that's the impact. That's the moment. And then you've got some nice little transition stuff, nothing too big going on. And then you might have another moment. And
right.
I feel like that's how you keep the audience interested and involved.
And a lot of that I'll get, I remember from Marching Band, from doing, I remember this one formation. It was just the whole band. I think we had like over 200. So that was impressive in itself, but, they were just in a triangle or a block and they all moved from midfield forward, during this big loud moment of the score. And it was so take your breath away kind of a moment, but all they were doing was marching forward, you know, and it was so, one of the things that you remembered out of this whole show was that one moment. And it was because it was simple, but it was so effective.
Well, I love that you guys are mentioning that because a lot of, I guess, Lauren, especially your point, like sometimes you don't have to do more than you need to because the moment, as you guys are describing, is built for the effect already. But figuring out and learning when to make it complicated and when not to is part of the trick, right?
Exactly. I mean, that is the key. You have to, you know, it's like writing a story and there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's no different. Writing choreography is no different than that. I don't think you just have to, you have to really, really, really listen to your music and pick out the places in the music where you want your moments to happen. And then you have to make sure that, I mean, obviously the kids have to be able to execute whatever you give them to do. I don't know. You just have to make sure that you don't make the entire thing so difficult and so busy. Sometimes, you know, busy is not always best. You really need to listen to the music and make sure you find, like I said, the moments and highlight those moments. And, you know, they may or may not be the most difficult section. They may be the easiest section.
Right. So it's knowing and learning when something can be really simple and the effect will work probably even better than if it was something complicated.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And to piggyback on that, I think what musicality, if you can choreograph with that in mind, that's like what you're saying is if you can use your music to your advantage. That's when you know when to make your big moments and when to pull back, for sure. So
I feel like our thrust of our conversation was back when we had our lunch had to do with the fact that, again, so many times young choreographers, I keep using the word self-indulgent when I think about it. I know they don't mean to be, but, you know, it is kind of self-indulgent to think, oh, I really like to do this and I really like to do that. So I'm going to put that into the choreography and I really want to show everybody what I can do. And yes, it's not about that. It's about the show. And, you know, as an educator, it's about the kids that you're teaching, but it's not really. In dance, what people do is they'll do trick, 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 trick. You know, oh, big leap here and bunch of turns here. And that's not always the best choreography.
Mm-hmm. Or they'll try to do a certain style that the kids don't necessarily pick up, but they think that, you know, it's, they want to show off what they can do. And it's more about them, not about the kids, not about teaching the kids and making them successful. Oh. So I think self-indulgent is.
Yeah, that's a big one. The yeah. success part, mm-hmm. because, you know, they can't be successful in relating the emotion of the show or whatever it is that you're trying to tell, whatever story you're trying to tell, whatever character they're playing. You can't expect kids who, many of whom have just picked up a piece of equipment for the first time when they came to try out in the spring, you can't expect them 6 months later to have all this intricate choreography on the field and create emotion and tell a story and remember where their spots are from page to page of drill.
And that's score all. Well.
Yeah. I mean, so
how does somebody, how do you learn to pick your battles? How do you learn to know when it's appropriate to make it impressive and when it needs to be something simple?
Well, obviously you have to consider your, I mean, the first thing you have to consider is the level of the kids that you're working with. But, you know, I'll go back to, we may have mentioned this in the last podcast, but when we had, when we were doing IRMO together, I would always give you an A group, a B group, and a C group. Mm-hmm. And my A's were my most skilled, most experienced girls. The C's were the, you know, bless your heart kind of children. And, well, you know what I mean. They're
younger,
you know,
probably inexperienced.
Beginners. Yeah. Inexperienced. They'll get there eventually, but they're not quite there yet kind of kid.
Right.
And then you had your middle group. And so you try to create moments where, like Caroline had said in her dances, she's so good at doing featuring, you know, her A group, mm-hmm. but not staying with just the A group the entire time. So as far as a method for figuring it out, I mean, it is a lot of trial and error, but the best way to start and the great thing is when you can just admit that, you know, okay, I've got these kids to work with. It's, if I'm going to be a great choreographer, then I'm going to give these kids a show that they can be successful with. And that, I guess that's the big thing, is that figuring out that it's not how many cool things you can put in a show, that are intricate flag work, but how many cool, effective moments you can put in given the cast members that you have.
There you go.
You know, you talked a minute ago about sometimes not doing anything or doing,
yes,
something extremely simple is effective. I think that's very powerful. Lauren, I remember you telling me one time you did a dance. I think it was like a Bee Gees tune and you just had the girls walk. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that as an example? Because I thought that was really good.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what Caroline was talking about with, you know, some of the things that we do in drill writing, like the big push, you know, where they're just coming forward. And that's exactly what it was. It was just fun for the audience because it was a bunch of 70s music, which may not be fun for everybody, but but it was fun. And they just made a straight line across the back and just walked straight towards the audience for 8 counts. And I mean, people were going nuts. It's like a, you know, sometimes when the Rockettes do that simple little kick line, right, and everybody goes nuts over that.
Now, wasn't it the part of Staying Alive when they're, and you can tell by the way I do.
Yeah.
My
Yeah. Hey.
Me doing my Bee Gees invitation here. But that's what was so brilliant about it, was that you realized that one, it matched the music perfectly. And number two, by stopping and doing something extremely simple, but with, of course, a lot of attitude.
Exactly.
That it made the point. But that's so, so smart to realize when not to do too much.
Yes. Yes. And Caroline, didn't you have to do that a lot in the shows that you were dance captain for?
Yeah. When I was dancing professionally, for sure. You know, it's, you get out, you think when you get into that world, everything is going to be, you know, quad turns and you're going to be doing all these difficult leaps and you're going to be featured. And it's, and most of my experience was in musical theater, and musical theater, it's about simple yet clean and effective choreography. You know, it's not about going out there and trying to be the best. You know, I think at every studio or in every guard, you always have that one student that always thinks that they're the best and they want to be the big fish. And then when you get out, it's not, you realize that that's actually not what making a career, in dance or in guard is actually about. It's about being able to adapt and to be able to, dance with others and be clean and be effective. That was a lot. Especially when I was on cruise ships, that was probably the most difficult because you don't have your choreographer. You don't have your, you have a stage manager, but they're usually, not really part of your production company.
Right.
So it's up to the dance captain or the vocal captain to carry the show, throughout. And, to keep those, the integrity, like we're talking about the cleanness of the movement and stuff. And so that's where I got a lot of that experience from, for sure.
So let's talk about some of those things that happen. I mean, I think a lot of us that design shows know these, but I think we want to make sure everybody gets it. So you sort of mentioned already about the formations that you can put people in, and the way you change them certainly changes the effect. That's sort of a trick we know from drill writing too, but I think that's really smart to know that, you know, for dancers or writing a color guard show or anything. I guess also you mentioned it being simple, but really clean. So I would say one thing you're saying is that the cleanliness of it being so perfectly together and everyone performing it exactly the same way in the same style, that's a big part of it being showy but easy, right?
Yes, for sure. Yes. I think, yeah, being able to look like one, what's the word I'm looking for? Like one entity, I guess, you know, versus just a bunch of different dancers, but to look like you're all cut from the same mold, that's really, really effective. That's a lot of cleaning. but that's also to teach the kids that they don't need to overdo either. You know, sometimes for them, simple is better. Pull back a little bit. You don't need to go out there and, for lack of a better word, spaz out.
Do you guys have to explain to your students, like, okay, now the effect of this moment is the fact that we're all suddenly in unison, so you don't need to overdo? Do you talk about those things with them?
Yeah, definitely.
Lauren, how would you say that to a group of dancers? How would you explain that?
Well, we always start, whenever we're doing any kind of a piece, we always start with, you know, what's the intent of it? Because, you know, not all dances have to entertain. It might not be just a fun disco-y piece that's just designed to entertain. It might actually be something that's a little more, you know, trying to make somebody feel something or trying to tell a story. So I do just sit them down and we talk about, I usually let them listen to the music first. And then after we've listened to the music, then we talk about what the intent of the choreography is going to be and what we're going to try to do with it. And it's kind of just that kind of gets layered into it. You know, first, I don't know how it is with everybody else, but with the kids that I'm teaching, most of the time I just have to, after we talk about that initially, then we get right into the choreography. And after I've taught a few eight counts, then I immediately go and start working on the style of it or the emotion of it, the finer details, because I want that to be part of the choreography. I want them to learn that as we go. So that walk, for example, that straightforward 16 count walk, you know, I start off by saying, okay, it's right, left, right, left. Your hands are here. Your head is here and your eyes are focused here. But after they do it a couple of times and they get the mechanics of it, I stop right then and say, okay, but I need to have more attitude. I need to have more pizzazz, more sass, channel John Travolta, you know, walk down the street like he did in that movie. So it's just kind of a process, but I just don't get too far in the choreography without stopping to talk about the style of it, because that's what's going to make it effective, especially if it is something really simple.
Mm-hmm. And if you can give them a motivation for, I think, the piece as a whole too, a lot of times they'll adapt to that style because they'll know where you're coming from as far as choreography goes.
Well, I think it's really fascinating that you're mentioning that, because I think a lot of times directors and instructors like to just get the counts in and then they go back and they sort of put it in context of the show. But what you're describing to me, I guess, especially with dancers, is that they need to be doing it correctly from the beginning. You don't want them just to go through the motions without the correct style, because I guess they're practicing it wrong.
I'm sure that everybody has their own idea on that, but I feel like it's just almost like developing a bad habit. You know, if you let them keep doing it that way, then their bodies aren't trained to present that choreography the way you want it to. It's, you know, like the way they hold themselves. I used to have people ask me all the time, how do you get your girls? They must all take ballet. They must all do this and that and the other because they can hold themselves so well. How do you get them to do that? And it's because I never allowed them not to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would be given, you know, the first 4 8-counts when I'm just teaching the steps or just teaching the equipment or just teaching the movement. But then after that, you better be doing it with the right style behind it or we're mm-hmm. not going forward. And, you know, that's just how I don't think you can personally, I don't think you can teach an eight minute show and get all the moves down and then expect their bodies when they've been doing that for an entire month one way and then say, oh, and by the way, I really want you to emote right here and mm-hmm. do this right here. I think it's just part of the training.
Yeah. And I think you definitely, as a teacher or coach, you have to tell them that because especially if they're younger, they think that they can, oh, when I go on stage or when I go on the field, I'll just turn it on. You know, I can do that. And they don't realize that that's not going to happen if they're not doing that, you know, during practice, for sure. If you don't give them that intention behind what they're doing.
Well, the other thing you're doing that I think is so powerful, I want to make sure we're clarifying, is you're also modeling that behavior and that style for them. Because I feel like all the times that I see really fantastic dance groups or color guard groups, and you're wondering how can they look like that and stand like that? Well, then you see the instructor stand in front of them and sort of model the behavior for them. And there it is. They're yes. mimicking that. I think that's so powerful.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that all goes back to being precise and clean also. I've heard people say all the time in guard, oh, I mean, they're a great parking lot guard. They look great when they're warming up in the parking lot. And then you put them on the field and it's a whole nother story. Well, I mean, obviously you're adding the other element of the drill to it, but it's not only that. A lot of times I think it's because here again, they're not expected to always practice like they're going to perform. And so when they do get on the stage or the field, and then all of a sudden the adrenaline is there, they rush or they lag behind or they don't do it exactly right because the muscle memory is not there because they didn't perform it with that same style and that same intent. They didn't practice it that way. So then it's just not as clean. I mean, your body's going to do what it's trained to do mm-hmm. when the muscle memory kicks in. And if you walk on that field and you have not practiced that way, then that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, you write something really, really simple. You've got to fool people, you know, the audience, the judges, everybody can be fooled into thinking something was more difficult because it moved them. It was effective. So it all plays together. You know, mm-hmm. you make something simple, but you make them practice it with the right intent. Then it's just whistle clean and yep. everybody and the effect you want is there.
Yep.
Okay.
It's all about freaking them.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yep.
Well, see, you're making that sound really easy. And the trick, I think, is that it's not, because what you've just said is, you train them well, then you demand of them that they do things well while they're rehearsing. You have those high expectations for them. And then you also knew how to write something simple that was also effective and emotional. So that is easy. And no, that's simple, but that's not easy.
You know, Well, that's a great way of saying it. You're exactly right. And, you know, if there's really not some magic fairy dust that you can sprinkle on a choreographer and, you know, say, this is the formula. This is what you do. It is a lot of trial and error. Yeah. And if you were looking for steps, I think, again, I mean, we all know we have to listen to our music first. Most guard instructors are musicians as well. And of course they know that. But the key is, again, I think to find moments that, okay, this is where the color guard should be doing something intricate, and this is where they should be doing something maybe more simple. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there is a formula. I think you just really have to listen to it and make sure that, you know, if you've got some really, a really cool flag section that's going to be really intricate, I mean, make sure that what's sandwiched around that is a little more simple, because, you know, you don't want your music to be loud for the whole time. So with choreography is the same way. You don't want it to be just in your face, in your face, in your face. You have to give people a minute to breathe. And that's why you've got to have some more simple moments.
Yeah, there's got to be some, can't be monotone the whole time, you know, and that's what a bunch of tricks, if it's just tricks, tricks, tricks all the time, people get bored and they don't want to see that. They want to see, you know, the ebb and flow during, you know, a 2-minute dance or an 8-minute show. That's how you keep their attention.
Yeah, great point. And I'm sure, like Caroline, on these cruise ship shows or theme park shows or those kind of things, there are moments that are special that make everything work. And then the part between it is just done well. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. The in between, you know, there's it's a lot of staging. A lot of the smoke and mirrors that you see is and again, it's very similar to drill. You know, it's all about the staging and the way that your performers are carrying out what you've given them to do, for sure. In those in between, like you said, there's moments, you know, but they've got to commit to those in between just as much.
Well, which is really why we started here. You know, Lauren, you were talking about those moments, the first things we were first saying. The other thing I want to mention too is, Lauren, you and I would spend a lot of time planning together. If I was writing the drill and you were writing the color guard or the dancers or whatever, you know, we would plan out those moments and, you know, what did it need to look like and how did they need to be staged, whatever. And that was wonderful for me as a drill writer, because I knew what you needed when. You know, do we need them all in one big wedge, or do you want to have your A group of special stars for this moment? You remember doing all that, I'm sure.
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, I don't think what we did would have ever worked had we not done it that way. I mean, we've talked before about making sure that you put the right dancers in the right positions and that kind of thing. And, you know, I did think of one thing that I think is a good thing to remember with maybe somebody who's beginning in the choreography field. You can put choreography on your guard or dancers and then look at it. And, you know, if you need it to be a little more intricate, you really don't even have to change it. You could do something as simple as having every other person face the other way. So you've got kind of an A-B thing going. You've got half of them facing the front, half of them facing the back. And so all of a sudden, it looks like a completely different thing, but it might even be the same 4A counts that you used in a different place when they were all in a wedge all together.
Right.
That's the kind of little tricks. Oh, I frequently would, when I first started, would way overwrite. And then I would go back and I would have to simplify, you know, water it a little bit. I called it giving it a shower. So I would have to go and give the choreography a little shower, water it down. But a lot of times I didn't necessarily water it. I just did things like that. I had one face one way, one face the other. And, it, you know, it just made it look completely different.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, like you said, is trial and error too. You'll give them something and then you'll go, it needs something more. And so you do the directions, or you can do, you know, the peel off or the layering, like the first group goes for the first four counts and then the second row picks up and the third and all that. And it makes you go, ooh, wow. Versus if they were all doing it together, might not look so good.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're not afraid to change it or fix it. And you're not, and what you're describing here are things where the choreography might not be that difficult, but the way you're presenting it makes it interesting and impressive.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes, again, you don't really, when you're first starting out, you might not even think about that. And those are just some little tricks to, especially if you've got a lot of inexperienced people and you really need to punch up a particular moment in the show and make it a little more exciting. But because everything's just being in unison and they really can't handle anything any more intricate. But how many times can you do the same move over and over? Well, that's when you get creative. And like Caroline said, you do this group, then this group picks it up, then this group picks it up, and then you have them all in unison. And then maybe you turn one to the back and you keep doing the same thing. But, you know, it looks different and it is effective. And again, trial and error.
Yeah. Yeah. Staging can be your best friend when trying to make simple look. Yeah. Be moving. So.
Yeah. Great point. And if there's somebody that's new and they're trying to figure out these tricks, I know one of the things we always tell them to do is watch a lot of groups. And so that's, would you recommend the same thing?
Oh, I definitely would. Inspiration is great. You know, obviously copying somebody else's work is not great, but certainly watching as much as you can and getting a feel for what other people do, you know, something like that AB work, you might not have considered that, but you watched another group and you thought, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. So you don't do the exact move, but you just use that concept of the A and B.
Right. Like looking at a tape and noticing, oh, okay, well, they're doing this big unison moment. It's really impressive, but let's really study the choreography. You know what? It's really very, very simple.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So sort of analyze a little bit.
Right.
Very cool. Well, before we go, is there any other tricks or suggestions or information or advice you'd like to give about this sort of stuff we've been talking about?
You know, the one thing I was going to say before we go is we were talking about the ABC groups. What I've really, and this don't mean to get all hippie on you or anything, but my C group, the biggest thing that I've noticed that makes a difference is to make, and I think, you know, at our studio, we do a really good job with this. You make them feel just as important as the A's, and you make them feel like they are just as much a part of that show or that dance or that piece. As much as the A's and what they're doing, what we do couldn't be done without them, you know, and just that confidence building, really at the end of the day, I think, it helps the dance, but it also, at the end of the day, you can look back and go, okay, I'm making a difference. And that makes everything, you know, worth it, no matter how you score, no matter how you compete, you know, no matter what the judges think of what you did.
Well, so you just make it a conscious point to mention that to them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or just, you know, maybe not so much to where they know that's what I'm doing, but just make them feel just as good as, you know, the front row. Yeah. Because that makes a big, you know, if they're in the back and they feel bad about themselves, you know, say you put them in the back row and you put a flag in their hand, they're going to look like bumps on a log with a flag in their hand. If they don't feel good about what they're doing, you know, they're not going to look confident.
Well, and Lauren, you and I used to find ways to give everybody something important to do.
Yeah, we really did make an effort. I mean, it's definitely hard to do, and that adds a whole nother layer to what you're being asked to do as a choreographer. But it's very important because, like Caroline said, I mean, it all goes back to one of the very first things we started with our conversation with today is what we're doing really ultimately should be for the kids that we're teaching. I mean, we all want awesome shows and we want to do well at competition, but if that is the only reason that you do it, then you're kind of missing the point. And so making sure that you consider the children that you're working with, the students that you're working with, and making sure that what they have to do is something that they can be successful with and feel good about being in the activity. That's what you're really trying to accomplish. And if you can remember that, then you won't go down those self-indulgent roads of making things way too hard and way over their head. And I think people don't really mean to do that. They think they're challenging, you know, they want to, oh, I'm challenging my kids to be better. And that's good because obviously they need to be able to have something to work towards. But you pick those those places that they're going to do that. This is going to be our really hard flag feature right here. And, you know, this is where we're going to learn new skills and really work towards perfecting them. But then your role is to enhance the show of the marching mm-hmm. band. So then you've got to be sure it's clean. But as long as you keep the kids at the forefront of what you're doing, then everything does seem to make sense.
Yeah, great point. Well, you guys are just wonderful. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. And I love that what you're talking about. And thanks for doing such great work with all those young dance students out there.
Thanks, Tim. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Find out about upcoming podcasts and guests by signing up for a free VIP membership at our website at marchingroundtable.com or following us on Facebook or Twitter. Visit judgesregistry.com to see the best new way for contest promoters to find a judge or for judges to be found. judgesregistry.com. All graduates of the Judges Academy get added to the Judges Registry upon graduation. Find out more at judgesacademy.com. And there's a new version of the Judges Academy designed for directors, instructors, designers, band parents, administrators, and marching members. Find out more about this at judgingdemystify.com. Thanks again to Lauren and Caroline for joining us on this podcast, and thanks to you for listening. If you're a business that works with band directors, marching bands, color guards, or drum lines, you should consider sponsoring an episode of the Marching Roundtable. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach, and with thousands of podcast downloads each month, it's a great way to directly reach your target audience. For more information, click on the Sponsorship Opportunities link at marchingroundtable.com or email Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. You can grow your business and help support what we're doing here on the podcast. Thanks.